On the show today, more details emerge on what happened in the Mediterranean when a migrant ship capsized.
Alexiou said the Coast Guard made several attempts to contact and approach the vessel before the tragedy, but any and every bid was rebuffed.
Plus, now that Finland is a NATO member, we'll find out how things have changed in and around the Baltic Sea.
For the tiny Estonian Navy, the accession of Finland, its Baltic neighbor, is a safeguard that puts limits on Russia's ability to operate freely in these waters.
And later, electoral politics in Zimbabwe, and a look at what America's relationship with Israel means for Israel's relationship with China. Today is Friday, June 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in downtown Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Electoral politics in Zimbabwe in just a few minutes. First, though, some more context on a story we first brought you yesterday. As we know, at least 79 migrants have drowned and hundreds more are missing and feared dead after their boat capsized off the coast of Greece. But could the tragedy have been prevented? Anthi Karasava reports from Athens.
Six Coast Guard vessels, a military helicopter, and a Navy frigate continue to comb the site of the tragedy, some 50 miles south of Pylos in southeast Greece. Hopes, though, are fading. So far, 104 migrants have been recovered, all of them men, the majority from Egypt, Syria, Pakistan, and the Palestinian territories. It remains unclear how many people were on board the battered 30-meter fishing boat, but initial accounts from survivors put the number to as many as 750. Worst yet, 100 of them, women and children, were said to have been kept below deck, where smugglers are known to keep them locked in perilous journeys to the west. The causes of the tragedy are being investigated, but on Thursday, authorities here said the boat was left drifting across the Mediterranean shortly after it set sail from Libya, bound for Italy. Nikos Alexiou, a spokesman for the Greek Coast Guard, explains. At some point in the early phase of the journey, the boat lost its engine, he says. Because it was overloaded, movement of people on deck appears to have caused it to tip over and capsize. Alexiou said the Coast Guard made several attempts to contact and approach the vessel before the tragedy, but any and every bid was rebuffed. They even refused food and aid offered by commercial vessels that sped to assist them before we got there, he said. That's how headstrong they were in their bid to reach Italy. Since coming to power 4 years ago, the conservative Greek government of Kyriakos Mitsotakis has enforced tighter migration controls. Alexiou dismissed allegations that the tragedy could have been averted. Had we forcibly intervened and tried to haul the vessel to safe waters, an even greater tragedy would have followed. Greece, he said, would have then been blamed for causing the tragedy. Instead, Alexiou said, Greek Coast Guard opted to watch. And if they had not been close enough to act as fast as they did, he said, the tragedy might have been worse, with a number of survivors significantly less. European Union officials have expressed sadness, as they put it, over the tragedy, but called for more united strategy to combat migrant smugglers. Human rights groups say the crackdown would simply force more migrants to seek more perilous routes to reach the West. The United Nations says more than 70,000 refugees have arrived so far in Europe's frontline Mediterranean countries, including Greece, Italy, Spain, and Cyprus this year. Nearly 1,000 people are estimated to have died or gone missing in the Mediterranean this year alone. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens, Greece.
The Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front has ruled the country for 43 years, But the opposition party thinks the nation's poor economy might give it an opportunity to make gains in the country's upcoming elections. Columbus Mavunga has this report from Harare.
On August 23, Zimbabwe will hold a general election with the country mired in an economic crisis, with the prices of goods and services on the rise. Independent political analyst Rejoice Ngwenya says President Emmerson Mnangagwa is having a hard time convincing voters his party is making life better for people.
With the local currency fast losing value in the average Zimbabwean facing price-related poverty, it will be very difficult for President Mnangagwa to sell his economic agenda to exasperated Zimbabweans.
The Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, is Zimbabwe's main opposition party, led by Nelson Chamisa. Fadzai Mahere, spokeswoman for the party, which is also known as CCC, says the opposition is being treated unfairly.
The constitution also requires that we be given the voters' roll in advance. It's not fair that ZANU-PF appear to have the voters' roll, which is why Mr. Mnangagwa was able to send SMSs to citizens using the new boundaries, and yet the CCC, a key player, doesn't have the same. We also call for an end to the political violence.
Zimbabwe's previous elections, especially the 2008 vote, were marred by violence against the opposition. This time, President Mnangagwa has been calling for peaceful elections. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission turned down a request for an interview, saying it would hold a press conference as the elections approach. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Now that Finland is in the NATO alliance, and it looks like Sweden will soon be too, the Baltic has become a stronghold of NATO forces. It's a new political military scenario that's very different from the one that existed before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Marcus Harton narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina in the Estonian capital, Tallinn.
German and British fighters prepare for routine control of the Estonian skies as part of the NATO air policing mission that has been underway since 2004. But there's an important new addition. Finnish planes are now participating. Finland's accession to the North Atlantic Alliance creates a new scenario in the region. That's what Vesa Vasara, Finland's ambassador to Estonia, says.
Our joining Finland and Sweden is important for the defense of NATO in the Baltic Sea region and, mind you, in the Arctic as well.
Observers say Estonia's security, like that of other Baltic countries, depends on the direct support of its Western partners. Viljar Viebel is a researcher at the Department of Political and Strategic Studies at the Baltic Defense College in Estonia.
Our own military capabilities are very limited. So if you say that we have 24 self-propelling howitzers, so it's no tanks, no airplanes, no warships, so it's no fighting helicopters.
For this reason, for the tiny Estonian Navy, the accession of Finland, its Baltic neighbor, is a safeguard that puts limits on Russia's ability to operate freely in these waters. But analysts also warn it does not mean that Russian forces will stay out of the region. Ardo Ryben is commander of the Estonian Naval Operations Center.
Yeah, we have to keep that in mind, that there is still freedom of navigation, and even for Russian Federation, we can't deny it somehow. But to conduct different kind of operations, trainings, so on, it's going to be much easier.
Moscow has not ceased its activities in the area, as Robert Stedman, a British defense attaché in Estonia, explains.
We continue to see activity at sea, and we continue to see activity in the air. With our air policing mission, there have been a number of intercepts of Russian aircraft in international airspace.
For the Estonian authorities, the accession of Finland and the bid by Sweden are good news, but they also note that Moscow is taking countermeasures. Hanno Pevkur, Estonia's defense minister, spoke to VOA.
We see already that they are building new divisions, new corps, here in our neighborhood. But nevertheless, yes, we clearly understand that this is a countermeasures of that that Finland and Sweden are joining NATO.
Finland and Sweden applied for membership following Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year. Finland has since joined the alliance, but Sweden's status remains in limbo. Hungary and Turkey have yet to ratify Sweden's membership. Turkey has linked Sweden's accession to stricter counterterrorism measures. NATO accession requires the approval of all member states. Analysts agree the Baltic is now a sea virtually under the control of Western powers, an unexpected twist brought about by Russia's full-scale assault on Ukraine. For Ricardo Marquina in Tallinn, Marcus Harten, VOA News.
And we are also following these stories from around the world. With the Ukraine Recovery Conference in London scheduled for next week, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Thursday that the war in Ukraine demonstrates the need to stand with Ukraine and continue to provide support. An Iranian journalist who was jailed last year for conducting an interview with Mahsa Amini's father said on Thursday that she's been fired from her job at the newspaper where she had just started working. Australia is blocking Russia's plans for a new embassy near the Australian Federal Parliament, citing unspecified national security concerns. And Kosovo Prime Minister Albin Kurti is demanding the release of three border police officers. Serbian officials say they were arrested deep inside Serbian territory. Kurti says they never left Kosovo. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Saturn's tiny moon Enceladus is back in the news again. An international team of scientists, led by researchers from the Free University of Berlin, Germany, has discovered a substantial amount of phosphorus in ice particles ejected from the moon and into space from geyser-like plumes of water. These bursts of water are said to be fed by a salty liquid ocean deep beneath the thick ice crust of the moon. Scientists made this discovery after analyzing data gathered by NASA's Cassini mission to the Saturn system, which ended in 2017. Phosphorus is an important chemical element that helps make life on Earth possible. Previous research from Cassini data indicated that the ice particles also contained a plentiful variety of minerals and organic compounds. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
It's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. India's Prime Minister is headed to the United States. We'll learn more in a few minutes, but now a close look at one of India's top regional rivals, China, and the Chinese relationship with one of America's allies, Israel. Israel and China have developed close relations over more than 30 years, but American pressure on Israel has Jerusalem pulling back. Linda Gradstein reports.
The operation of a newly expanded shipping port by a Chinese company in the Israeli city of Haifa is only one of the joint China-Israel infrastructure projects launched in recent years. Chinese firms are also building part of the Tel Aviv light rail system. Yuri Pines is a China expert at Hebrew University in Jerusalem.
China has now the best infrastructure in the world. China is able to export its knowledge, its know-how, its engineers, its workers. And Israel benefited enormously.
China is Israel's largest trade partner after the European Union and the United States. But Israel has had to curtail some of its economic agreements with China under pressure from the U.S., which has an increasingly tense relationship with China. Israeli analysts say Israel does not have much of a choice given the close ties between the U.S. and Israel. Gedalia Afterman is the head of East Asian Studies at Reichman University.
There's growing pressure from the United States on Israel to limit its engagement with China, specifically on infrastructure and technology. And that pressure is starting to yield results.
While China's involvement in the Middle East has generally been focused on trade, it recently entered the political arena when it brokered a deal for the resumption of diplomatic relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia. China's close relationship with Iran, as well as its traditionally pro-Palestinian stance, has worried many Israeli leaders. But some Israeli analysts say Chinese diplomatic efforts could benefit the region as a whole. Again, Yuri Pines from Hebrew University.
It is so rare to have in the Middle East a major country which is really neutral, which is not engaged, is neither pro-Israeli nor pro-Iranian nor pro-Saudi nor pro-Egyptian. It is just a neutral country interested in economic ties with all parts of this very complicated Middle Eastern equation.
Pine says China may be the only country in the world which could be trusted by both sides to mediate between Israel and its enemy, Iran. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Next week, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi makes his first visit to Washington in 9 years. The trip comes as the United States and India increase cooperation in critical emerging technologies. Matt Dibble has that story.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi will meet with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington for talks expected to further their efforts to boost technology and manufacturing between the two countries. There is a deal in the works with General Electric to produce engines for India's military. The White House says the visit will expand on a strategic technology partnership, including in defense, clean energy, and space, as both governments seek to counter China's influence in the global tech landscape. Modi, who introduced a Make in India initiative 9 years ago, has struggled to turn India into a tech and manufacturing powerhouse. Rick Rossow is chair of U.S.-India Policy Studies at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He spoke to VOA by Zoom.
There are areas in the past where India has had global scale success in manufacturing, but those are few and far between.
Rossow says infrastructure weaknesses and burdensome regulations at the state level hinder growth. Ben Zhang is CEO of Greater Pacific Industries. He spoke to VOA by Zoom.
They feel like, hey, time is not important. They take forever to fulfill a project.
Ben Zhang's American company has manufacturing deals in India, but he feels the country has a long way to go to compete with China on price and speed.
China is like, okay, you get a project, boom, 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 they get done.
But political tension and COVID-19 lockdowns in China are accelerating change. Foxconn, which makes iPhones for Apple, will open a new factory in the Indian state of Karnataka next year, bringing 50,000 jobs, according to the Reuters news agency. And the first two Apple stores have opened in the country to much excitement. It may be India's wealth of engineering talent that helps the country make its leap forward, says Rossow.
You'll probably see more of an emphasis on India providing a lot of the technology and engineering background to do the back-end develop, design, and research is exactly what India's terrific at.
India has now overtaken China in population. Competing in tech and manufacturing dominance is still a work in progress. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Oakland, California.
The United Nations says it's concerned about the prevalence of sexual violence in camps for internally displaced people in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Activist Passy Mubalama and others are trying to help women at risk. VOA's Paul Ndiho visited the camp and has this story.
Activists like Passy Mubalama, a former journalist and the recipient of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, has seen the gender-based violence that is happening in camps in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. A victim of sexual violence herself, Mubalama set out to educate women on ways to protect themselves from sexual violence through Aid Profit, a nonprofit she founded.
We are doing actually sensitization and to mobilize the community on preventing and respond to violence, gender-based violence in the camp. And we are also trying to provide psychological support.
Mubalama says she has seen firsthand the impact of sexual violence on vulnerable people living in these camps. She holds sessions for sexual violence survivors in the camps, but also workshops on prevention.
We also work on positive masculinity because most of the time men are the perpetrators of sexual violence. So we are trying to work both sides with men and women.
Mobalama says they advise women to walk in groups, especially if they go to the forest to collect firewood. Also urges victims to come forward, not in order to punish, but to heal.
We believe keeping silence is not good. If they want to get support from Medprofen or other different organizations, they have to report the situations.
Mobalama says it is challenging and emotionally exhausting experience, but it is also fulfilling to see people start to rebuild their lives after experiencing trauma. However, because of the stigma around the issue, it is difficult for people to come forward. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has taken additional action to combat Russia's malign influence in Moldova. Throughout February and March 2023, thousands of demonstrators participated in anti-government protests in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau and other major cities. The United States has designated seven leading members of a Russian intelligence-linked group and one entity for their role in destabilizing operations in Moldova and other countries to weaken support for democratic governance. The individuals that were designated today were part of a plot to capitalize on protests in Chisinau that were designed to seize the Moldovan government house and conduct an opposition meeting, National Security Coordinator for Strategic Communications John Kirby told reporters. These actors provoked, trained, and oversaw groups in democratic countries that conduct anti-government protests, rallies, marches, and demonstrations. In a statement, the Treasury Department said that the February and March protests in Moldova were organized by the fugitive oligarch Ilan Shor, whom the United States has previously designated for having been responsible for or complicit in interference in a United States or other foreign government election on behalf of the Russian government. As the White House noted in a March 10, 2023 statement, capitalizing on the Moldovan protests was an effort to foment a manufactured insurrection against the Moldovan government. The designated individuals are part of a large global information operation connected to the Russian Federation that targets Ukraine, countries bordering Ukraine, including Moldova, Balkan countries, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The designated individuals, Konstantin Prokopievich Sapochnikov, Yuri Yurievich Makalov, Gleb Maximovich Kloponin, Svetlana Andreevna Boyko, Alexei Vyacheslavovich Losev, Vasily Viktorovich Gromovikov, and Anna Travnikova are all members of this Russia-connected malign influence group. Alexei Losoviev's workshop, Perko Yuloichter, was also designated. The U.S. action comes after the European Council and Canada sanctioned several individuals for engaging in destabilizing activities against the Moldovan government. The sanctions shine a light on Russia's ongoing covert efforts to destabilize democratic nations, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Brian Nelson. The United States remains committed, along with the EU, to target individuals who engage in such activities against the government of Moldova.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.